the our panel. Give me your attention, please. We have one more panel, and these individuals really demonstrate the diverse interests that blind people have. They live the lives they want with gusto. Marguerite Woods is an active senior, and she's president of the at-large chapter, by the way.
Woo-hoo!
And Donna Cosant, who came all the way from Michigan to be with us, Donna is the mother of five.
Wow.
There was a period when Donna was a vendor in the Randolph Shepherd program, and now she works as a naturalist and she's always been very active in the National Federation of the Blind. And there are probably some other careers that I don't know about that Donna has. Now, Nico Staley does not let his hearing loss and blindness prevent him from living the lives that they want. So we're going to start with Marguerite Woods, and then we're going to go to Donna, and then we're going to go to Nikos. So Marguerite, take it away.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are you? Good. So when Sharon asked me...
I know. But hold on. We got to get the listening device.
For Janice.
Jesse.
Oh, dear.
Okay, you gotta put that around your neck.
Okay.
Yeah, push it back a little bit.
Is that great?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, good morning again, everyone. And I did.
Yeah, it's way far back.
Okay. All right. Is that better? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, when Sharon asked me to speak about you can live the life that you want, she asked me to share with you a little bit about my experience going to India. And so a lot of you already know about that, but when Sharon asked me that, it made me think about it. What does it mean to live the life that you want? I absolutely love the NFB credo, and so I've really taken it and sort of tried to make it my own. And so I really thought about what does it mean to live the life that you want? And initially, you might think it means everything goes smoothly and you want everything to work out well. And that's a nice dream. But when I thought about it for my personal self, I realized that I really love adventure and diversity. So it made me look back a little bit into my early life. And for some of you, if you bear with me, I'll share this a little bit. When I was younger, I was among one of the first women to work at Bethlehem Steel in the steel yard. I was a ship fitter. So for those of you who want to know, that's like a carpenter only with steel. So you can see that I've always loved adventure and doing things that are diverse and different and meeting really different and interesting people. And then at one point when my son had, I discovered he had auditory dyslexia, I had to sort of work in temporary jobs so that I could be available to be an advocate to make sure he got what he needed. And so when I hear about what's going on with blind students and all the work that you guys do to help that out, I really can relate to that. And so once he was settled and I got him in school and got him going in the way that, you know, made sense, I decided that I wanted to do something different, and I decided that I wanted to work in computers. And so I became a technician, and I worked with a long-distance phone company some of you might remember called MCI. Yeah. Yes. So I worked in the switch, and I was working on the East Coast, and just incredible working with different people all over the country. And so, you know, the adventure of it was awesome. So when I started losing my vision when I was working with MCI, and as a result, sort of faded away from that field a bit. But when I became totally blind, I really, at some point, felt like the adventure was gone from my life. And so I was reacquainted with BISM and the senior program. So when I started there, I started getting some skills, and I started gaining some confidence, regaining confidence. And I started getting back what some of you may know as my mojo back. And as I was beginning to get that back, I realized that, you know, the adventure in me was still asking for more. And so I was able to become a part of the CORE program for 9 months. And so that put me in this awesome position that when this opportunity came through for me to apply for a scholarship to go to India for a year, I felt confident and in the attitude, but I also was confident in the skill. I completed the application and I was accepted, and I was on my way. Now, for those of you who went to BISM with me, you will understand that computers for me at BISM, it was like the hardest thing ever. I just could not grasp it. I wanted to see it. I was really pissed off that I couldn't see it. And so I didn't do so well with computers. But I get this opportunity to go to India, and I had to do everything on the computer. So because of the confidence and the skill level that I did gain, I was able to get through that process and was given a full scholarship. I had to do things that I never thought I was going to have to do. And once I got to India, I thought the adventure was over. The adventure began. And I want to tell you that the skills and the confidence that I've learned at Blind Industries and the philosophy from the National Federation of the Blind served me extraordinarily well. When I was in India, I was asked to be a part of a company that worked with a group of people who were in the medical field, and they were going to expand, and they wanted to figure out what they could do in order to help the new employees get on board. And I discovered that in India, they never heard of a mentorship program. So I was able to assist them in creating a mentorship program so that the new people and the people who wanted to come along in a different way could have a hands up. And I used the model and the experience that I had with the National Federation of the Blind and Blind Industries to help me help them set it up so that their employees could gain an opportunity to live the lives that they wanted. And so the adventure continued for me from there. And in addition to that, just maneuvering and living in India, living with a group of diverse people from all over the globe. There were people there from six of the seven continents. And so I discovered that my skills and my confidence just really helped me to be able to relate to people, to communicate with people, and to manage a lifestyle that was completely different from anything that I had ever experienced before. And as a senior, I was really surprising myself because, you know, at some point you think, okay, so I've got this. This is how it's going to be. And I'm sort of familiar with it. And so I'm coasting through. But once I got to India, everything was so brand new. I had to really pull out the skill set. I had to use the mindset that I had to you know, acquire as I went through BISM. And so it really helped me to help myself. And it also inspired a lot of other people and made them pay attention to the kind of work that Blind Industries and National Federation of the Blind are doing. So much so that this program has seen its way all the way to the west coast of Africa. And it continues to be the gift that keeps on giving. And so I've been a person who's been able to live the life that I want. And that's a life of adventure and diversity. And it continues today. As I live my life, I belong to a senior center. And I'm the only blind person that attends there. And it doesn't feel right to me for the area that I live in that I would be the only blind person. So I started talking to them when I first got there. And nobody wanted to hear it, but I'm not going away. And so I continue to make relationships with people there. And this past Meet the Blind Month in October, I was able to have a program there at the Senior Center in which I was able to invite Melissa Riccobono, Ruth Sager, and Ms. Gordon, Annette Gordon from BISM. And we all had a panel discussion with a group of about 80 seniors. Wow. To let them know about the work that Blind Industries and National Federation of the Blind are doing. And it's beginning to be more of something that's acceptable. People aren't so afraid because they're recognizing that we are people and that we create relationships just like you do with any other people. And the diversity is that our situation is that we're just blind, but we can do anything and everything that we want, but we have to decide that we want to do it. And so I'm here to say I can and you can live the life that you want.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Okay, well, now we're going to hear from Donna Polson. Donna, the listening device is coming to you. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Donna.
Is this microphone on?
Yeah.
Okay. Can anyone name that bird? Oh, I forgot. The kids in childcare are the ones that know about the birds. So I need some of them, like Austin, Miracle, Miranda.
Oh, Austin, what's the name of the bird?
Hold on, don't tell us.
Oh.
Hold on. Not quite, but he thinks that because he learned about the Baltimore Oriole yesterday, which happens to be the state bird of Maryland. And some people's favorite baseball team. All right. Well, greetings. My name's Donna Polson, and I flew all the way here with the birds from Detroit, Michigan. And in Michigan, we have a program of blind people who understand and learn about the birds, identifying them by sound. And we call ourselves the Michigan Bird Brains. Is it okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. A couple years ago, I partnered with the University of Michigan Environmental Interpretive Center, where I attended school and was a student in the environmental studies / biology program, and I wanted to do something with blind people during my educational stay there at the university. So about 5 years ago, I asked him if I could use a room there to help blind people start learning about birds by identifying them by sound. Now, some people think that's strange, but all the great birders of the world say that they identify birds 90% of the time by sound, and then they get their binoculars out and find them. So it wasn't really that strange of a thing. Well, 2 years ago, the university asked me to partner with them and run my program through the Environmental Interpretive Center. So what we do is we meet once a month for birding classes. We take field trips. We've been on week-long trips to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and we do camping trips, all in an effort to identify birds. But we've graduated to birding by ear and beyond, a sensory experience. And what that means is we've taken on a total interest in nature, and we've learned to do things like bugging by ear, and we do frogging by ear.
I like that.
And can anyone identify this? Yeah, pterodactyl, that's right. Well, like my teacher says, when you name the species, the learning stops. So you have to keep collecting information, and then you want to learn more about nature. So we do tree identification, and Friday I had some of the items in the exhibit hall. I have leaves that have all the proper veining on them, and blind people can totally feel what they are like and identify the tree by the leaves. However, I don't think we're too far south to lose our leaves here. No, you have deciduous trees. This is only Maryland, right?
Yes. Yes.
So you're losing your leaves, although yesterday we still heard a lot of leaves on the trees. And in Michigan, they're pretty much gone off the trees. So winter comes and no leaves to identify the trees. So we have to put together some other clues. We learn the texture of the tree bark. We learn the kind of fruit or nut. Reach around on the ground. There's an acorn down there. Hey, it might be an oak tree. So we put together all our clues, and this is how we can do nature as blind people. Now, it hasn't always been this way for me. In 1974, when I graduated from high school, I wanted to attend West Liberty State College. I did attend West Liberty State College with a little scholarship from the NFB of West Virginia, by the way. And that seems like a long time ago now. I wanted to get a degree in biology and transfer to the West Virginia University. But the first week in the classroom, I tried to take chemistry and I tried to take biology, and I realized I had walked into a living nightmare. The biology room was full of all those microscopes. I couldn't use those to see. The chemistry lab was the periodic table. I didn't understand that. And I didn't know enough to know that I could learn as a blind person. And the people at the university, I thought, were going to help me. Right away, the counselor comes. I'm like, we're going to fix this. He's like, why don't you switch to social work? So 40 years ago, actually, my dreams were diverted, and I went into social work. Now, I can't say I regret that. My life took a direction different from this, and it took me to Philadelphia, where I worked in social work, and I met a group of people there that were blind. One of my favorite people, I have to mention, Arthur Siegel, is no longer with us, but he was a great, great influence on my life. And I met these people, and I joined the National Federation of the Blind, my first convention in Miami Beach in 1979, and I never looked back. I went home and put a cane in my hand and went back to work, and the rest is history, as they say. So about 10 years ago, I started volunteering at a camp for blind children on the western side of Michigan called Camp Tuscmahita. And this is Sarah. Sarah's a Camp T kid. So we would be walking to the waterfront, or they'd be doing arts and crafts, and I'd be listening to something tapping over in the trees, and I'd want to know more about that, which happened to be one of those, or one of these. And I wanted to know about these things. So in 2008, I approached the University of Michigan Dearborn, and I'm like, I want to go back to school to learn about nature. I don't even know what you call it. I don't know what I want to do. But I want to learn about nature so I can share it with blind people. So they introduced me to a teacher, Dr. Oren Gelderloos, who's my hero. And he said, I don't know anything about learning as a blind person, but I do know about nature, and I think together we can get the job done. And that's exactly what we've been doing for the last 6 years. So my first internship, I looked for something that I called blind person friendly. That's where I came up with the birds. I could squeeze them. We could identify them. We wanted to know more. We wanted to know how they nested. We wanted to know what their beaks felt like. We wanted to know how they migrate, what they eat. And the rest is history. Now it's birding by ear and beyond. And this spring, I graduated from the University of Michigan. And at that time... Yes, go blue. And at that time, the director asked me to come on the staff and actually be a paid staff member to do what I was already doing, which was teaching blind people about nature. So, yahoo! Well, people ask me what I'm going to do when I grow up, and I'm not sure. And they ask me what I'm going to do when I finish my master's degree. And the only thing I know is I'm going to do exactly what I'm doing right now, which is sharing nature with others who are blind, because that's my passion. That's what I want to do, and I know I can learn as a blind person, and I know I can help other people learn how to interpret the natural world. Recently, well, for the last 2 years, with my involvement in the university, we have partnered with the National Federation of the Blind of Michigan, which is also a we for me, and we presented summer science programs for blind teenagers. This summer, we did the Sensational Adventures in Science, and we had Dr. Carrie Sapolo there. We did a lot of chemistry. We had a Braille book, which we illustrated with our tactile sketch pads, easy tactile sketch pads. Yay. And I was helped by Al Manicki with that. Great thing. And we did graphs and charts, and we used the tactile sketch pads. We collected data with the weather, and we used our sketch pads and made charts. We traveled to the International Wildlife Refuge, which is the last undeveloped mile of land on the Detroit River, which was saved by the Native Americans and preserved now as the only international wildlife refuge. Well, we bought these knee-high boots, and we trudged into the marsh, and we were, some of us, over our boots, up to our knees in marsh water. We learned about the diverse habitat in there. We learned about the birds, and we laid our hands on cattails and duckweed. And my favorite item of all, which was ecology at its finest, a swamp milkweed, which for those of you that don't know, monarch butterflies only host, which means they lay their eggs on species of milkweed. So we found a blooming milkweed, and the naturalist that was there showed us there were two monarch caterpillars, exactly like we had learned about right there on that milkweed. So I say ecology at its finest. Blind people can lay hands on it, and we can learn about the natural world as blind people. What kind of bird is that? It happens. Austin? Is Austin still here? No, I'm not going to name anything. The learning will stop. No, just kidding. It's an American toad, and the kids in childcare learned that it's not a frog because it has bumps on its body, so it's a toad.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Go ahead, Dan. Should I move?
No, just no. Give it to
me.
Yay! Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Donna.
Go ahead.
Go. My little okay. sister.
Okay. Good morning, NFB and BISM. I'm Nico Staley. I'm the lead recruiter at BISM, and I found the NFB when I was six. My mom was looking for a blind organization. I was adopted from Greece, and that's how I found the NFB. And my family really raised me to live the life I want, and through the support of the NFB, that's what I am bound and determined to do. I like to take high risks to get high rewards. So one of the things I do is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's a form of martial arts, and I first started doing it because I'm one of nine kids, and anybody who has brothers know that you guys are going to get into a lot of wrestling matches. So being the youngest of nine, I'm thinking, man, I have to do something, or I'm not going to make it. I need to defend myself somehow. So I started wrestling in high school, and then I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. A buddy of mine from church encouraged me to call and just take that high risk. And, you know, he had only taught one other blind person, so I just show up one day, me and my guide dog, hey, this is Nikos, what can we do here? And that was in September of 2013, and I loved it. I really love the class. They're a great group of people. It's very hands-on. It keeps you in shape. It wears you out. So I did that for, actually to this day. And then I decided about it a year ago that I was going to get my blue belt, which is the next rank beyond a white belt in jiu-jitsu. So I talked to the same buddy of mine, and we started lesson planning, and he printed out the Excel sheet online, and we went over the moves. There are 66 different techniques you will be asked to do, and the instructor can call out any one of them. And then you will just have to do them in front of the entire room. They're all sitting around the wall just looking at you, so I like to say, be glad you can't see. So, because nobody wants to see that. They really don't. So we were going to do it in September, but then the instructor decided to move the test up a little bit. I don't know if this ever happened to you in college, but it's like a college professor saying, you know that test you were going to take, we're going to move it up 2 weeks. I hope you're ready. So, and as my friends know, when I get nervous, I don't shut up. I stop. I just keep talking about the same thing over and over again. So On June 8th, I went and took the blue belt test, did the moves I was asked to do, and then after that, you're supposed to do a fight for your life for 10 minutes against two expert-level brown or black belts. And the goal is not to win, but just to survive. Just don't. Yeah, just don't tap out and hang in there for 10 minutes. And then I received my blue belt. So, some other high-risk activities that I like to do are, if anybody's ever heard of Go Ape, it is a extreme high rope course. There's one in Rockville. It's very blind-friendly. There's all you do is you follow the cables and the rope ladders and do zip lining, and it's just very high above the ground, and it's just a thrill. You're up in the trees, and it takes a few hours to do. So I encourage anybody who wants to go up there, find a Go Ape site, and have at it. I also like to do tandem biking. I've been doing that right around the time I did jiu-jitsu. I started tandem biking with anybody. I'm always recruiting. Hey, who wants to bike with the blind man? Come on. You know, I've scared a couple people, too. We crashed into a fence, and my roommate says, nope, we are done. Mm-mm. I said, you sure? It's only like 2 miles an hour, man. Come on, try it out. But, yeah, it's usually my girlfriend and I. We bike in Baltimore, and while biking may not be a high risk, biking in Baltimore is. If anybody knows the Baltimore drivers, you know, you really gotta just pray and wing it. That's what I say. And just other things like that, like skydiving. I'm going to go skydiving on Monday. Yeah. So as much as this may sound like that's all he does is high risk, not all of living the life you want is a high risk activity in the usual sense of the word. There are many other social things you can do that have just as much risk as things like skydiving. And one of these for me was when I joined the young adult church group in 2012. A friend told me about it, who I was working with, and said, you know, Nigos, you should show up. They're nice. They're your age, and I think you'll like it. So, Nikos leaves the house in plenty of time to make sure he and his dog do not get lost, because when you want to be somewhere, that's when you'll get lost. It happens all the time. So, I went to my first young adult group. I loved it, and I just decided, well, if I'm going to stand out, if I'm going to make myself noticed and that blind man won't go away, I'm going to show up to everything, every meeting, every event they had, every prayer gathering. And then one day, I was asked to be the head of social at the young adult group, the guy who was in charge of running the hikes and the bowling and the other high-risk activities I can get these people to do. So, you know, through the help of the NFB and my friends and all, that I was able to take that confidence I learned, and here you got a guy who's a little cautious before he gets into things, say, hey, can you run social? So I'm in the group to this day, and I love it. Love every minute of it. Yay. So the last thing I want to leave you with is that I feel that the NFB is stronger when we have more well-rounded members. Just get out there and do it. Find something, anything. I don't care what it is. Anything you want to do. Just get out there, be bold, talk to people, say, how do you do this? I'm really nervous about going to this conference. They do all these social things, and I don't know what to do. And get as much encouragement as you can. Take those high risks, and you will achieve high rewards. Thank you.